here we are. Welcome to the Stronger Stride podcast. Thank you so, so much for joining us again today. Or if it's your first time, welcome. Thank you for jumping on board. Now, today you are here with Sophie Lane. I am one half of the show, and I'm going to be taking you through a actually really interesting episode. Now, I get super excited for our guest episodes, and I find them super enjoyable, and I'm pumped and just love that so much. The solo episodes I enjoy, but I definitely don't get as pumped except for today. I don't know what's going on, if it's the Friday afternoon vibes or what it is, but I just feel really excited to talk to you about tapering, which I never thought I'd be that interested in. I feel like of all the parts of training, surely tapering is not the most thrilling part. It's not the event. It's not the build up with all the fun sessions, but I am just pumped about this research that I've been discovering. And I've never been one to get super into the research. Blake Withers, if you're listening, I love your passion for the research, but I've never been as enthusiastic as that. But today I'm feeling good. I'm feeling as though I'm going to share some stuff with you that I didn't fully understand prior to reading through this. And I never fully got why we taper, why is it important, how do we do it, how should it actually look like, why does it matter, all that kind of thing. Very similar to the last two solo episodes where we've spoken about GI issues and the runner's high. Two topics that I never really understood, but had now spent the time looking into them and trying to understand them a little bit deeper. And definitely not claiming to be an expert in any of these areas, but really enjoying the process of learning and exploring and understanding these things a little bit clearer so that I personally can perform better, but also I can coach my athletes and understand their training processes a little bit more, and also just help you listeners understand how this all works and why these things matter. Now, basically how today's going to work, I'm going to explain to you what actually is a taper. What does it mean? What does that word mean if you're not even familiar? We're going to go through a little bit of listener statistics. I put a couple of polls up on our Instagram story just to get a bit of an understanding of what you guys do with your taper, how that looks. So we'll discuss that briefly, and then talking about how do we actually do the taper. What does that look like? What does it involve? What do I need to avoid? How should I do it? Kind of what the research is saying at the moment. Then we're going to talk about why. What is actually going on physiologically? How is this happening? What's changing? Why does it matter if I drop my volume by a certain percentage or do things a certain way? What is actually going on deeper down? Then we'll talk a little bit about the cons, or maybe some negative, side effects. I don't know if that's quite the word, but negative associations with the taper, maybe some things that have come up in your personal journey with the taper. I know it can be quite a stressful, uncomfortable, anxious time for a lot of people because you're not training like you normally would. You've got a little bit more time on your hands, maybe a bit more time to think. Maybe you're starting to doubt yourself, feeling like you're not ready, you haven't done enough, and by that point it's too late to make any change in terms of improving your VO2 max or your fitness or your strength or anything like that. So it can be a really tricky time for some people, so we'll discuss that a little bit. We also have a listener question or two that I will hopefully have time for, and then finishing off with some recommendations. So this is what you want to stick around for. If you get all the way through to the recommendations, you've done well. The recommendations are where the gold is at. If you really want to, you can skip ahead. I don't know when it will be, probably in about 20 minutes. That will basically detail what I think you should be doing based on the research. Now, of course, a lot of this is my opinion based on what I know, and I do not know everything. I will link some articles below. I promise I'll remember to do it this time. I think I might have forgotten once before. But basically, just a quick shout out to a couple of these research articles because a lot of this information is based on those. So we have Tapering Strategies for Elite Endurance Running Performance by Kate Spilsbury. That was really, really critical in me really understanding this process. And also a systematic review and meta-analysis that was released this year, so fresh off the press, which was The Effects of Tapering on Performance in Endurance Athletes. We've also got another 5 or 6 papers that I'll link below. So if you're keen and want to learn more, that will all be there for you to read through. I'm also going to go through a bit of an example taper of what it actually looks like, because we're going to be talking a lot about physiology, a lot about numbers, and maybe it'll be not making a lot of sense. But once we understand all the background information. We're going to put it together at the end in a really easy to digest format that you can understand and hopefully take away for your next event, your next race, your next build up towards whatever you are working on. So yeah, that's how it's going to work. Don't forget to check out our links below. We would love some support. If you need any Tailwind, Vivo Barefoots or Scorcher Skincare, then please, please use our links. It supports us, which means we can spend more time working on the show, which will be fantastic. All right, so kicking things off, what is a taper? What does it involve? What does it mean? Now, a taper is very, very simple on the surface. It is simply a reduction in training load. Now, our training load is obviously made up by the training that we do, and this can be categorized into volume, frequency, and intensity. So these three variables are what we'll spend a lot of time talking about when we get into more of understanding of the how this looks. So volume, frequency, and intensity are really, really important. Now, volume simply being your total training. I'm trying to think of a word that's not volume. Basically, think of it as your kilometers or your time on your feet. So if you're spending 50 kilometers running each week, that would be your training volume. Or if you were spending 3 hours running each week, that would be volume in this context. Frequency is the number of runs or the number of days that you're running on, the number of sessions. And then intensity is how hard you're working. When we speak about intensity in this context today, we're more talking about those higher intensity efforts and why they might or might not be important, but I'm not going to give it all away just yet. So we've got a reduction in training load prior to competition, and the reason that we want to do this, overarching reason, is to reduce the accumulative fatigue that we would have built up from our weeks and maybe months, maybe years of training, and to optimize our physiological training adaptations, okay? So we've got kind of twofold process there. We want to reduce our fatigue. We want to freshen the legs. We want to make sure that we are well rested, well recovered. We're increasing our sleep, not training so much. So we can therefore optimize these adaptations that we would have had throughout the training process. Okay, so there's no point doing all this training, working really hard, pushing yourself into the ground, smashing out all these really hard sessions, doing these big long runs, and then doing a race and not actually being able to reap any of the rewards because your fatigue level is so high. So often us runners, triathletes, endurance athletes, ultra runners, we're balancing this really fine line between doing enough and doing too much. And we're often almost on the edge of that overtraining. A lot of us are overreaching where we're pushing our body to the limit. We might feel a little bit fatigue, feeling a little bit more tired than normal, pushing the boundaries, but we're not yet injured or we're not yet unwell. We haven't quite overdone it, but we're almost there. So if we are in that state for quite a while, it is super, super important for us to get out of that state, to reduce our total training volume, or sorry, our training load, to calm things down, help our body heal, recover, and adapt so that we can then put all of that work that we've done and all those physiological adaptations that have occurred to good use. Otherwise, we're kind of just wasting all that training, okay? So the taper is really, really important for those reasons. Now, the way that a taper can look kind of takes a few different forms. We've got three main categories with how the taper could be structured, okay? So the step taper, which is really, really straightforward and is probably not the most recommended, but basically, let's say, for example, if you've been running 40 to 50 Ks a week for the last 6 weeks for your last training block, then you might reduce your training load to say 25 kilometers for the next 2 to 3 weeks as your taper, and then you do your race. So you would just go from whatever you were doing before, you'd take a big chunk out of it, which we'll clarify in terms of how much that would be later on. But let's just say for now, we halved it. Okay, so we've gone from 50 Ks to 25 Ks, and you're gonna maintain that volume or training load, including whatever intensity, whatever frequency it is, you've just halved it exactly for the duration of your taper. Okay, so there's no progression or change from, you know, gradually working your way down to a lower training load. It's simply just cutting it in half or taking 20% off or 70% off or whatever that number is that you've chosen, and you just stick with that for the taper period. Okay, so that's the step process. Probably not super common, probably wouldn't advise it, but it is an option. Then we've got the linear taper. Okay, so let's imagine our training load as a percentage. So if we're saying our 100% training load is what we were doing the week prior to our taper, we're going to gradually work our way down to for example, 30% of our training load. It's really hard to do this without visuals, but I will attach some images and some articles that have this all graphed out, and I'll put it on the Instagram so you can have a look. But basically, just imagine a graph with the left hand, what is that called? The x-axis, the one that goes up? That one will have training load as a percentage on it, and across the bottom will have time, and this linear one will start at the top left and it will go diagonally down to the bottom right. So you're just kind of linearly reducing that training load. So it might be 90%, 80%, 70%, 60%, 50%, 40%, 20%, whatever, 30%, 20%, over those few weeks of your taper, okay? That's linear. The final option that we have that seems to be the most prominent amongst the research and seems to be showing the best results is the exponential option. So we've got the exponential taper, and this is split into two categories again, even further. We've got the slow decay and the fast decay, okay? So decay to me, I don't know why it's that word, that just reminds me of tooth decay, but anyway, we are calling it fast and slow decay. And basically all that looks like is if you imagine an exponential graph. So again, we're starting at that top left of the graph. This time we're having a bit of a semicircle as we drop down quite rapidly, and then it sort of flattens out towards the end. Okay. Now the slow decay version of this doesn't drop down quite as low, so your training load doesn't reduce so much, but the fast decay does go a little bit lower. Okay. So imagine, let's just visualize this. I know it's probably hard to see without looking, but check the links below and you can have a look while we talk through it. Step taper is just a flat line across. You've just completely dropped your volume, dropped your training load. I keep getting those words mixed up, I'm sorry. Dropped your load, and it's just going to be the same throughout the whole taper period. The linear taper is that diagonal line going from top left to bottom right as you're linearly decreasing your load. And then we've got the two exponential tapers, the slow decay and the fast decay, and they are dropping down relatively rapidly and then flattening out or plateauing at the bottom. Hopefully that wasn't too complicated to visualize, but they're the types of taper. Okay. Now, in terms of timing, how long should your taper be? I think this is quite confusing, and some people might take a whole month to slowly reduce their training load. Some people just take a week off. Now, of course, as with anything, it depends. That's the boring answer. There are so many variables. You've got to think about your training history. You've got to think what is the actual event that you're training for? How far is it? How intense is it going to be? How important is it to you? Is this just a B race that you're just throwing in as part of your training? Or is this the thing you've been focusing on for a year? Okay, that's really, really important in terms of the taper period. But what the research is suggesting is a period of between 8 to 14 days appears to be the most optimal for endurance running. Okay, so anywhere from roughly a week to roughly 2 weeks seems to be the way to go. And I think that makes a lot of sense for a lot of us. Anecdotally, I think that seems to be what a lot of people do. I'd say for a marathon, potentially people would look further out to maybe towards the 3 weeks, maybe even the 4 week, with a really kind of slow gradual drop. But about 2 weeks seems to make a lot of sense to me. In saying this, there are a lot of studies that kind of grew that duration out from anywhere from 6 days all the way out to 4 weeks, as I just said. So it does vary a little bit. But in some of those systematic reviews, it found that the 8 to 14 days seemed to be the most superior. Now, this was also dependent on your prior training load. So if you had a higher prior training load, then you need more of a taper, which makes a lot of sense. If you were doing massive weeks, if you're doing 100K weeks, 100 mile weeks, whatever, and then you've got a marathon, it makes sense that you need to drop yours down even more or make a more dramatic change purely because of how high your pre-taper load was. If you're not doing heaps already, then there's probably less of a need for you to have such a dramatic taper if your training load isn't as high. But it's not a matter of comparing your training load to someone else's, because 50Ks a week for you could be huge, whereas 100Ks a week for someone, they could be so used to that that that's not even an issue for them. So it's not a matter of saying, okay, so higher prior training load matters. It matters for you if your training load is higher than what you're used to, not compared to someone else. Okay, so it's a very relative term. But what we tend to notice as well is that the pre-taper overload, so if we're really significantly overloading, maybe we're overreaching, we're progressing our training quite a lot leading up to the taper. So you might have your biggest training run for that block maybe 4 or 5 weeks out before the taper. We find that this really increases the benefit of the taper. So if you've had a really nice progression, if you've slowly built up and you are having that little bit of overload, bit of overreach, not quite in that overtraining area yet, then you'll probably get more benefit from the taper because of the effects that we'll talk about soon and the physiology that we'll talk about. It'll make a lot of sense in terms of kind of glucose utilization and those kind of things. If you've had a big training load, you're going to feel the benefits a lot more with the taper. So we've got a bit of an idea on duration. We've got anywhere from a week to 2 weeks, roughly, potentially up to that 4 week mark, depending on a number of individual factors. And this is where hiring a coach comes into it. So you've got someone to really look at this on an individual level, but we'll keep talking about the concept so you get a good understanding. So how does this actually look? Now, the best practice that was really, really prominent across a lot of different systematic reviews was that a reduction in volume with a high intensity taper carried out in a progressive fast decay pattern. Okay, there's a lot of parts to that. We've just spoken about the fast decay. So that's that exponential graph where we're really dropping down quite quickly, reducing training load. You know, if we've got a 2 week taper, let's say the first half and that first week of the taper, we're going to drop quite significantly, maybe 40, 50% of our training load or our training volume. And then we're tapering off a little bit, kind of flattening that out and keeping it relatively low but stable. Okay, so that's that progressive fast decay pattern, a really quick drop, tapering off a little bit. Now, the other parts of this were the reduced volume. Okay, so we're having a reduction in our training volume. Now, as we spoke about before, and I know I've mixed these words up a little bit, but training volume and training load are two different things. So our training load is encompassing volume, frequency, intensity, and you could probably throw duration into there. Now, what we're talking about here in terms of what the research is saying is best practice is a reduction in volume. Okay, so this means that you will do less kilometers or less time on your feet throughout the week, but while maintaining your intensity. So this is kind of, if you're going to take anything away from today, this is the thing I want you to understand. Really important that we reduce our volume, we reduce our kilometers, but we maintain our intensity, and in some circumstances, potentially even slightly increase our intensity. But we don't want to lose that intensity. Okay, we'll talk about examples and how this actually looks practically soon, but that is basically the best practice that we've got at the moment: a reduction in volume, maintenance in intensity, maintenance in frequency. So the days per week doesn't seem to matter too much. When you are reducing volume, it's probably inevitable that you'll reduce some frequency, unless you're just having lots of really short runs, but practically that probably doesn't make a lot of sense for a lot of people. But basically reducing the volume, maintain the taper with that progressive, fast, exponential pattern. Okay. Now, what we're really trying to do here, and what we're kind of on the edge of this whole time, is finding the balance between fatigue recovery and performance improvement. So we're really trying to make sure that we are getting ourselves fresh and ready to go. We're reducing our fatigue. We're not feeling the effects of that overtraining or overload. We're feeling fresh and ready to go, but not so fresh and not so recovered that we're having decreases in our performance. So we know, just anecdotally, you know, if you take a few weeks off running, then you're going to probably feel a little bit less fit when you get back into it. Things might feel a little bit harder, and it does take a little bit of time to feel like you're a bit where you were before. So what we want to really try and avoid is having any of these detraining effects or reducing our performance because we've tapered too much. So again, same with our normal training and our peaking and our sessions and our overload. It's a really tricky balance between giving yourself enough time and a really solid recovery period, but not so much so that you end up losing these training effects. In terms of that detraining effect, and this is kind of what I'm talking about in the consequences section a little bit later, but we don't tend to see a reduction of training or reduction of performance anywhere less than 14 days. So if you're doing a 2 week taper, that shouldn't have a negative effect at all on your training status. In fact, it will hopefully improve it if you've done it correctly. But beyond the 14 weeks, maybe up to the 14 days to 21 days, we can start to see some changes in our training, which is why it's really, really vital that we maintain our intensity throughout this period. So the reason that this reduction in volume is so important is because we need to reduce the volume enough so that we can alleviate any of the physiological disturbances that are associated with this heavy training. Okay, so we've done this big heavy training block. Maybe we've been training for 6 or 12 months relatively consistently. Hopefully we've had some planned deloads in there to reduce some of that strain and make sure we're recovering well. But at the end of the day, if you've had a good solid training block and you're about 4 or 5 weeks out from the race, you're probably not feeling your best. You're probably relatively tired. You're working quite hard, quite a lot. So we need to try and alleviate some of these disturbances and effects. Some of these problems can be involved with our glycogen depletion. Maybe there's some neuromuscular fatigue, maybe some decrements with our hematological health. So maybe some issues with our red blood cells, maybe our oxygenation isn't functioning as well. And we might have some hormonal imbalances as well. So thinking about things like cortisol and testosterone and estrogen levels and all these kind of things can really change when we are overtrained or overstrained and working really hard. So the taper is really important so that we can kind of balance these things out a little bit more. We can bring some recovery to all these systems, not just our muscles and tendons, ligaments, but our nervous system, our endocrine system, all of that can be restored a little bit more. Okay. So we know that we need to do less, but how much less is enough or too much? The research seems to say that between 40 to 60% of our training load can be reduced for the taper, and that seems to be the most optimal. So anything more than 60% didn't seem to have very good benefits. We started to get a little bit of that detraining effect. Anything less than 40% didn't really have too much of a change because it wasn't quite enough to really have any solid effect. So anywhere between 40 to 60%. Now, I'm not fantastic with numbers, but I will talk you through an example later of what this actually looks like on paper. But basically, just think about roughly half of your training load. And depending on which method you use in terms of the step or the linear or the exponential, slow or fast decay, that will depend on when that percentage is changing. So for example, pre-taper, you're at 100% of your training load. Maybe if you're doing a 2-week taper, your first week, you might reduce that by 40%. And then in your second week, you might reduce that by 60%, okay? So by the time you're at your race, you've dropped that volume down, or that training load, sorry, down by 60%, okay? So that's a rough kind of estimate. There are different research articles that suggest anywhere from basically 25 to 85%, but that middle mark between 40 to 60 seems to be roughly where we should be aiming for. Now, it seems as though intensity should not be changed much at all, maintained, if not slightly increased. I think for a lot of us recreational runners, potentially there might be more risks than it's worth in terms of increasing our intensity. So if you're someone who's trained for the last 12 weeks and you've been doing some sessions, is it worth increasing that intensity? It seems like the jury's out about that, but definitely maintaining it. So still doing some sessions, but just reducing that total volume. Okay, so you might be doing, before your taper, you might do a session of 5 lots of 1K efforts at race pace, with a 2-minute recovery between, for example. During your taper that first week, you might drop that down to say 5 lots of 500 meters, okay? So you've halved the volume there already just within that session. You might do a slightly shorter cool down if you know, normally do a long cool down to add a bit of mileage in. Maybe you drop that down a little bit. Maybe if you do a tempo run, it's a 30-minute tempo run normally, you might drop that down to 10 or 20 minutes in that first taper week, okay? So we're still keeping that intensity section in there. We're still getting the legs used to working at that pace, and potentially for those weeks in our taper period, we're doing our higher intensity sessions at race pace, so we can get our body used to that, okay? But we definitely don't want to just slow down and just do easy jogs. If we're going to remove anything, which we should, it should come from that training volume, okay? So reducing your kilometers per week, not the intensity. So at the moment, we understand how the taper should look in terms of a time frame between 1 to 2 weeks, potentially a little bit longer if it's a longer event or you've had a higher training load for a longer period of time. We understand that there are different options with this taper period, and we know that the exponential fast decay is our most superior option. And we know that volume is really the key thing that we need to reduce in order to have an optimal taper and therefore an optimal performance while still maintaining some intensity in that training. But why does any of this matter? What's actually happening physiologically? So I'm going to read out a little statement from the systematic review that came out this year that I think is a really interesting way of understanding a little bit more clearly, and I feel like I can't do it justice by paraphrasing it, so I'm just going to read it to you word for word, so bear with me. Studies have shown that tapering in endurance athletes significantly increases blood volume, hemoglobin, erythrocyte pressure volume, and improves mitochondrial respiratory function. The improvement of these indicators enables the improvement of the oxygen carrying and oxygen transport capacity, maintaining a higher percentage of oxygen utilization capacity, which ultimately leads to an increase in endurance performance. All right, so there are a few big words in there, and that's why I didn't really want to change it because I felt like they all needed to be in there. But basically what this is saying is when we have a taper for an endurance event, our blood volume increases, so we're getting more volume. We've got some changes within our red blood cells and our hemoglobin, which basically is our oxygen carrying capacity. So our red blood cells carry our oxygen with our hemoglobin. This is a really important process. Obviously, we need oxygen to fuel our endurance and our aerobic efforts. So if that's better, if we've got more of that, if that's working more functionally and improved, then that's fantastic. Our mitochondria is the powerhouse of the cell. Everyone knows that from year 7 science, but that's improved with our respiratory function. So these things all indicate that our ability to carry, utilize, transport oxygen has improved. Therefore, we have an increase in performance. I think that makes a lot of sense. We know that for endurance, aerobic performance, we need oxygen to help fuel these performances. So if our ability to move oxygen around the body and absorb it and use it and transport it is better, then we're going to have better performance. So I think that's really, really important to understand. There's also some other changes. So we've got metabolic, neuromuscular, hormonal changes all happening, which might in their own right contribute to this improved performance. We're going to have reduced muscle fatigue. I think that's a really easy one to get your head around, okay? Your legs aren't going to be so tired. I think we get so used to as runners just generally having relatively heavy legs, maybe DOMS, maybe we're, you know, you might be someone who's trained forever and you're just so used to it, you just don't even notice anymore. You just genuinely don't feel that discomfort because your body's so well adapted. But we will have a bit of a reduction in this muscle fatigue. We should feel a little bit fresher. We shouldn't feel any DOMS because we haven't done any significant training that would elicit that response. We're going to have some recovery within our nervous system, which is also going to be enhanced by sleep. So during this taper period, as well as doing less training, we also want to think about those big rocks that we should always be thinking about. Okay, so that's our sleep, nutrition, hydration. These are super, super important for the lead up to the race. And if we've got more time, we can spend a bit more brain power on working out how to really optimize these. So getting to bed earlier, you might not be as tired as normal because you're not training as much, but it's really, really important to just maintain that habit, maintain your sleep routine, or get a little bit more if you can. Staying well hydrated with water and electrolytes and eating well is going to be really important to maximize and optimize these processes. So we don't want to do all this hard work. We don't want to spend all these weeks reducing our training just to eat really poorly, not drink enough, and not get enough sleep, because nothing's going to change, okay? So that's really important to maintain as well. We'll also see this kind of replenishment in our muscle glycogen stores. So when we're exercising, we need glycogen or glucose to fuel our exercise. Glycogen is stored in our muscle cells. So when we're constantly exercising, we're constantly having to kind of draw the glycogen out of the muscle cells and use them and then, I guess, replace them, okay? When we're not running as much, or we're doing less, or we're not doing anything as intense, then we don't need to do this as much, right? So as a result of that reduced training load, we've got this lowered glycogen utilization and therefore a greater recovery time between sessions. So that's a really nice thing as well. We've got more access to that ready to go glycogen, easy to use. It's all in there, stored away. We also can see some increases in power and strength, which depending on what we're doing, which sport we're doing, how far we're going, could be beneficial, might be neither, but it's definitely not a bad thing. So yeah, they're kind of the key benefits. So we've got that improvement in that oxygen utilization process. We've got some hormonal changes. We've got some recovery and reduced fatigue to our nervous system, which is super important for every function that we have. We've got this change in that glycogen utilization. So we've got more access to energy and fuel. Our total blood volume and red cell volume has increased as well. So there's a lot of physiological changes that are happening here, and they're particularly highlighted if we've had that real overload period and now we're having a really good, proper, structured taper. It's not going to have such an effect if we just completely do nothing, which we'll come back to later in the listener question. But yeah, there are just a few things. That's just reminded me. I was going to tell you the statistics that I forgot about. I was going to tell you these at the start to give us a little bit of understanding of what people were thinking. But I'll hit you with them now just to break things up. I've given you a lot of big words, so let's just simplify things briefly. Now, I put a poll up on Instagram saying, during a taper, do you reduce A, B, C, or D? Now, we had volume, frequency, intensity, or multiple, okay? Because I figured some people would obviously be doing a combination of these. Now, we had 43% of people voting for volume, 4% for frequency, 9% for intensity, and another 43% for multiple. So I realized soon after putting up that story that we needed to have another poll, because when they've chosen multiple, we don't really know what that means. So I think this next one is super interesting. So 45% of the people who voted for multiple changes when they do their taper voted for volume and intensity. Second to that, 35% was volume and frequency. And then finally to that was volume, intensity, and frequency. So we've got 65% of the votes. No one voted for intensity or frequency, by the way. So 65% of the votes had intensity related changes to their taper and reduction. So I think that's really interesting. I think clearly I've just gone over it, but we now know the maintenance of intensity is super, super important. So for anyone who voted that in the poll, I think it'd be really nice for you to have a look through the research, listen to this episode, obviously, and try and understand a little bit about why you might have done that in the past. Where has that idea come from? Is that something you've been told by your coach? Is that your own idea? Did you just think that you just had to reduce everything? Because I definitely didn't know this for sure. I knew that volume was kind of the key, but I definitely would have tapered off my intensity, maybe, you know, just done a couple of strides instead of a tough session. So I think that's a really important one for us to note. So yeah, coming back to the sciencey stuff. Actually, let's go into the maybe contraindications or the negatives, the downsides to a taper. We've got lots of positives. We know what's happening physiologically. We know how we should be doing it. We've got that time frame. We've got how it should look. But what's kind of the issue with the taper, or what might come up during this period? So a lot of anxiety and insecurity and lack of confidence can be really, really common amongst runners during this time. Okay, so for a lot of runners, running might be their identity. It's maybe their main form of socialization. Maybe it's their main or only form of exercise. It probably is a really, really large chunk of what they do. When that's then reduced or taken away from them, it can be really hard to firstly maybe know what to do with your newfound free time. Maybe you're feeling a little bit nervous because you're feeling as though you haven't done enough. Maybe you're feeling like a little bit more sluggish and slow and tired. And I think a lot of that just is our body recovering and soaking up that free time that we now have. And it's not in this fight or flight mode. It's actually able to sit and relax. And potentially that's why we're not feeling like we're firing quite as quickly as normal. But I think, again, this brings us back to why the intensity is so important, because if you are someone who struggles with that confidence leading into a race, feeling like you haven't done enough, feeling like you're too slow, maybe your jogs during your taper period just feel sluggish and not good, maintaining some intensity throughout this time is probably a really nice confidence booster and probably something that's going to make you feel good. You might get a little bit more of that runner's high feeling from a faster session, and you might just feel as though, oh wow, actually I can do it. Because if you're just jogging for the 2 or 3 weeks leading up to your race, it's kind of hard to know whether, oh, can I still run that pace? I don't really remember what that feels like. I don't really know. And there was also some interesting research saying that maintaining your race pace or doing some race pace efforts throughout the taper period will be really helpful for your pacing strategy during the race. Because if you spend 2 weeks in your taper just jogging, and then you turn up to your marathon or your 10K or your half marathon, whatever it is, it's going to be really hard for you to judge what pace you should be at because you haven't felt that pace for so long. So anything that you do is going to feel way faster than the jog that you've been doing. And you're going to want to push the pace because you're not quite sure where that sits. But if you're actually able to practice, you know, if 5 minute K pace is your race pace, if you can do that in the week or two leading up in obviously a much shorter volume, a shorter session, but just getting your legs and brain understanding, okay, this is the pace we need to go at. There's actually some research to show that that improves your pacing strategy on race day. So not only will it make you feel better psychologically, but I think it'll also have a really good effect on your performance. The other con that comes with training is just that potential risk of detraining, which isn't as bad as we think. I think a lot of people get super nervous and worried that if they stop, they're going to lose everything. But I think it's really important, and we'll come to this now, the listener question, about not just completely doing nothing. So we've got a question here from Alice Bartley, and she asks, does tapering mean no exercise at all, or can you cross train with swim, bike, etc.? Now, firstly, yes, you can definitely cross train. I probably wouldn't go too hard on the cross training if it's not something you've been doing in that training block or much at all previously. If you've never swum before and you're in your taper period thinking, oh, I can't run as much, so I'll just go for a swim, I just don't know if it's worth the risk at that point in your training cycle. If you've spent so long leading up to this thing and then you've never swum before and you go for a swim, maybe it won't feel that great. I mean, swimming, I would imagine, is relatively low risk, potentially more so the bike might be not as wise if it's something that you're not used to, because it's just a novel stimulus. It's different. Your body's not used to it. You might end up a little bit more sore than you'd like, and it just might not be the best preparation. But in saying that, if you've been swimming and riding and doing all that stuff leading up to the training anyway as part of your normal training, then I think go for it. And I think just apply the same principles. So in general, that swimming and biking, I would reduce the volume, but I'd maintain some intensity, just like we're doing with the running. But coming back to the start of your question, does tapering mean no exercise at all or cross training? It definitely doesn't mean no exercise at all. Okay, so what we've learned from the research is that maintaining intensity is so important. And it doesn't explicitly say, I've really tried hard to find an article that compared no training versus a normal taper. Like, what does sitting around doing nothing do compared to doing a proper taper? And there really wasn't much that I could come across or find yet. I will keep going through and having a better look and seeing if there is anything else. I'll send it to you, through to you, Alice. But at the moment, I would really encourage you to maintain some of your training and just reduce it by that 40 to 60%. So what we were speaking about before, having that reduction in training volume, maintaining some training load through your intensity and your frequency, but just not doing as much. So I wouldn't advise not doing anything at all. I think from a confidence point of view, you're just not going to feel as ready, I don't imagine. I mean, maybe everyone's different. But I also just think physiologically we need to maintain, I just think it's healthy, right? I don't see many benefits physiologically or psychologically or practically to just doing nothing at all. I don't know if it would be the worst thing, but it just doesn't make a lot of sense in my head based on what we know so far. So I would look at reducing your training volume from 40 to 60%. And if you're already doing some swimming and biking, then keep that in, but just again, drop the volume a little bit. That would be my advice to you. So I guess that brings us to the end of our negatives, and we can go on to the fun stuff, the recommendations, the practical takeaway tips. Write these down. This is what you're going to do. Now, of course, it's not that black and white, okay? This is very independent, very variable, individual, I should have said. So take all this with a grain of salt. Speak to your coach. You can speak to me if you need some individual advice. I'd be more than happy to help with any of these training philosophy, training principles. But basically, here are some things that we can think about. So we know, and I've spoken about these before, but I'm going to make it a little bit more clearly for you. So what's really important to start off with before we get too into the nitty-gritty, it's really important that we plan the taper based on the preceding training load. So whatever our training load was prior to the taper, prior to the race, is how we determine what that taper looks like. So if you've done a huge, massive training block with 3 sessions a week and 150 Ks each week, then your taper period is going to look so different to if you, the same individual, has done a preparation that's involved 30 Ks a week, a couple of jogs, no real intense sessions. They're going to look totally different. So you really need to make sure that you look back and reflect, or hopefully have the taper already planned. But if not, if you're about to start your taper, look back at the last 6 to 12 weeks of training and see what that looks like, and then you can make adjustments from there. So what we're talking about in terms of percentages is obviously going to be appropriate and relevant to where you're at. So plan your taper based on your previous training load. We also know that that overload period tends to help with the taper process, and it more importantly, helps with the race outcome or the optimization of our results. So if you can look ahead to your next race and really plan a smart, scientific, calculated, progressive overload with appropriate deload, appropriate recovery period, but pushing the boundaries a little bit so that you are actually making progress and making gains, you will then be able to reap more rewards from your taper period and therefore get better results. So really making sure however our taper looks is really highly based on what our training has looked like prior. And that's what I was saying before in regards to Alice's question. There's no point just throwing a swim or a bike in there if you haven't swum or ridden your whole preparation. But if you've been doing those the whole time, then yeah, keep them in, but just reduce the volume. So it's really going to be individual. If you've done all road running, then I wouldn't throw in a trail run in your taper. I just think keep things consistent, keep things regular, something that you expect, something that your body expects, and it's used to that conditioning, but just changing that load, manipulating those variables. And that brings me to my next point. So we should really look at addressing each of these training variables, being volume, frequency, and intensity, separately. So not just looking at our total training load and going, okay, we're just going to reduce everything by 50%. We need to be more specific and calculated than that. And as we know, the training volume is the key here. So mapping out your training week, writing it down on a piece of paper, or on your calendar, on your phone, whatever it looks like, and going, okay, well, this is what my last month of training has looked like. This is my average training volume. This is my average kilometers per week or my average time on feet. This is the number of sessions or runs that I've done. And this is the rough intensity. So we can base that intensity just off the arbitrary RPE, okay? So if you're doing 5 runs a week and 3 of them are easy runs, so there are 2 or 3 out of 10, one of them's a tempo run, so it might be a 6 or 7. One of them's an interval session, so it might be an 8 or 9. Add those up and go, okay, my total training intensity is 30 for that week, for example. Also, I didn't calculate that, so that number could be way off. But you get the idea. Then you can reduce those things from there. So you would then reduce your training volume. If you were doing 50Ks, you might go to 30 and then to 20, for example. But that intensity needs to stay the same. So you need to figure out within your training, and this is where the coaching helps, is how do I actually do that? Because if you've got a session that is 5 by 1K and the total of that session might be 10K when you include the cool down, warm up, the jogging in between the reps, how do you then taper that down? So you've obviously got to reduce the volume but maintain the intensity. So making sure we're not just cutting things out without really thinking it through and, you know, maybe just getting rid of your whole, you know, if we got rid of that whole session, so we just deleted the 1K session completely, yes, we would be reducing our volume. We'd also be reducing our frequency. We'd also be significantly reducing our intensity. So if you just think about it like, oh, I just won't do that run, that could seem really logical at first because you're reducing your training load, but that's not the point. We want to reduce the volume but maintain the intensity. So really making sure we break down those three variables, looking at them on paper, and then figuring out which ones we're going to modify, which ones we'll maintain, which ones we'll reduce, okay? As part of this, the first part of the taper should, in an ideal world, include a rapid drop in volume. So we want to really quickly reduce that volume and then kind of maintain that reduced volume to the end of the taper, okay? So remembering that exponential graph, we're dropping down quite significantly, maybe 60%, and then sort of maintaining that through the second week, rather than sort of having this slow gradual decline, which would be more of our linear. We're thinking more about that progressive fast decay, okay? Most of the research is telling us to maintain frequency. Now, this might not be super practical. If you're someone who runs 6 days a week and you're trying to reduce your volume, it might just be easier to cut one of those runs out, okay? If you've got an hour run every day, 6 days a week, for argument's sake, rather than then just dropping them all to half an hour runs 6 days a week, which means you're gonna have to wash 6 different outfits, get ready, do those runs, like rather than just take one or two of those runs out, that might just be practical. And this is where the research and the reality don't always line up, okay? So just because the research suggests we're just looking at volume and not changing frequency doesn't mean that's always practical. And I still think you're still getting the same outcome in terms of that reduced volume as long as we're maintaining that intensity. Our duration, typically anywhere from 6, 7, 8 to 14 days, potentially slightly longer. And remembering that pacing strategy that we spoke about before. So pacing strategy is super, super important in order to prevent starting too fast in these races, okay? So because we're so well rested, because we're not fatigued, because we're normally in such an overtrained or overreaching state and now we're not, we're going to run super fast because we're so fresh and ready to go on race day. We've got the adrenaline, excitement, the hype. So making sure that we are including some pacing strategy within our taper period so that we're able to pace better on race day. So including some race pace efforts as your higher intensity sessions. That will be really, really critical in terms of making sure you're pacing well. So as an example, this is just a random generic example, no particular person in mind, but say this person is training for a half marathon. This is what their 3 weeks leading up to the race could look like. So what we're calling this first week is the pre-taper. So this is their final week in their big training block. This is their peak week, you could say. And then we've got our 2 weeks of taper and then the race. So this pre-taper normal training week, we're going to have 60 kilometers total training volume in the week. This will be made up of one fast interval session and one tempo session. So our interval session here is 5x1K that I've been speaking about before. Our tempo session is a 30-minute tempo, and each of these runs total about 10 kilometers each by the time we include warm-up, cool-down, and our jogging in between reps. So we've got two speed sessions. We've also got two easy jogs, which, just because it's easy maths, are also 10 kilometers each, and then one long run, which is 20 kilometers. Okay, so they're running 5 days a week, totaling 60 Ks in volume. We've got two interval sessions, two easy jogs, and one long run. Now, hopefully all the maths was correct there. Doesn't really matter, but you get the idea, okay? So that is our final training week before the taper. So then to go into our first taper week, we're gonna reduce that volume by 40%. Now, if my maths is correct, that will mean we'll go from a 60 kilometer week to a 36 kilometer week. We're still going to include our two speed sessions. So we're still going to have a fast interval session. We're going to move from 5x1K to 5x500 meters. So we've cut that volume in half. We're also going to include a 15-minute tempo, which is also cutting our 30-minute tempo in half. So these sessions will now go from 10Ks each to 5Ks each with less volume, but still maintaining the same, if not a slightly faster pace. We'll be doing that tempo pace at race pace and those faster efforts a little bit faster than race pace and a little bit faster than the week before. They'll be about 5Ks each. Then we've got two easy jogs that are going to be about 8Ks each, whereas they were 10 the week before. And then we've got one long run, which is going to be 10Ks. Okay, hopefully that makes rough sense. Now these weeks, just to make it a little bit more simple, these weeks are starting on a Sunday. So that long run would be 20Ks, maybe a rest day, interval session, easy jog, tempo session, easy jog. And then the following week would follow that exact same structure, still with 5 days. So our frequencies remain the same. We've still got some really solid intensity in there, but our total volume has changed to 36Ks. Then for our second and final taper week, so we've got our pre-taper, we've had taper week one, which is 36Ks. Now taper week two, we're going down to 60% of our previous training volume from our final training week. This brings us down to 24 kilometers. So we're going to drop down to 4 runs per week just for practicality's sake. Having that fifth run in there just doesn't quite work when we've only got 24Ks of volume to get through. We're going to have 2 speed sessions and 2 easy jogs. Now our easy jogs are going to be 7 kilometers each. So for this person, about a 40-minute easy recovery type jog. And our 2 speed sessions, we're going to have 6x200 meters. Okay, so we've significantly reduced. We've gone from 5 lots of 1K to 5 lots of 500 to 6 lots of 200. So our volume has nearly dropped by a fifth, by 5 times. Again, don't know the maths, but it's dropped a lot from 5Ks to about 1.2Ks total intense volume. Then we've also got an easy jog with 5 lots of 30-second strides, okay? So instead of that 30-minute tempo run, which then moved to a 15-minute tempo, now we've got a 30-minute jog or a 5K jog with 5 lots of 30-second strides, which are just 30-second efforts that are a little bit faster above our race pace. Okay, so 4 runs a week, 24Ks per week. That is how a taper could look for an average person doing a half marathon based on the principles that we've discussed today. So hopefully that puts a really nice clear picture into how it actually looks. We've got that reduction in volume, that maintenance of intensity, a slight change in frequency based on the practical restrictions, and that's how it could go. So I'd be really, really curious to hear your thoughts on this. I really want to know, do you agree? Do you disagree? Are you confused? Is it more clear now? Is it less clear now? I'd love to have any feedback so that we can make future episodes more informative. I've really, really enjoyed learning a little bit more about this. I'm going to have all those resources linked below. I'll put some photos up on Instagram as well when this episode goes out, so you can have a look through that. Hopefully they're still on there when you're checking this out. Maybe I'll make it a grid post just so it's there forever. So have a look through that. And if you've got any questions, please send them through. I'd love to hear anything from you, particularly those people who answered the poll and said that they reduce their intensity as part of this taper. I'd love to know why. I'd love to know how you do that. I'd love to know, are you open to changing that idea, or is that something that you find works for you? Because that's a really, really important part of this, is if you've got a tapering strategy that works super well for you and you feel so good on race day and you feel fresh and ready to go and you get really good results, then please don't change anything unless you're willing to experiment and you're willing to try things and you're willing for it to not go as well. If you're happy to accept that, then go for it. But I think really, if you've got something that works, that's okay. Do your thing. You know yourself better than anyone else. But I just really wanted to highlight some of this research because I think there's some really good stuff out there. And obviously we never know everything. We don't know it all. There is so much more to learn. This could change tomorrow and I could be totally wrong about all this. But based on what I know from the research, these are kind of the principles that I think are really, really important and that I'm going to start to implement with my training as well. So thank you so much. I'm going to talk a little bit about my training just to wrap this up. And I can't believe this has been 50 minutes. That was crazy. Hope you enjoy. Send any feedback. Please like, subscribe, share the podcast. It really means a lot. We really want to engage with you guys. So send any questions through that you might have. But speaking of taper, I have got another race this weekend. Surprise, surprise. That is three races in the past 4 weeks. And there'll be the Movember run the following week. So it's four events, all ranging from 25 to 30 Ks in 5 weeks. Not ideal. Now, it's really tricky to taper when you do a race every weekend, I have since discovered, and I'm not following any of these principles. Although this week my training load is a little bit less, and I know my intensity is still there because I'm still racing, but I don't know. I'm definitely not following an optimal pattern, but these things just happened. I really wanted to do GNW, and then I got a bit sucked into Narrow Neck, and then I got an opportunity to go to Stromlo with the Capital Brewing team, which I couldn't pass up. It's going to be so much fun. I'm so excited. I'm heading there in about 3 hours tonight, heading down to Canberra for Stromlo. And it's just going to be so much fun. So I'm really excited about that. I'm not taking any of these races too seriously. So as much as I am so on board with these principles now, I still think it's more important for this to be done for an A race. If there was something that I was really focusing on, like Tarawera, then I would definitely be following these principles. But for the moment, all these races are B, if not C races that I'm just doing for fun, to hang out with people, to see new places, to experience new things, and just to get a long run in, but in a more exciting environment than just around my local streets. So yeah, that's me. I've got that coming up this week. Narrow Neck was super fun, very dark because it started at 7 p.m. so that was to be expected. And I enjoyed the darkness for a while, and then I kind of got over it and kind of was looking forward to being able to see a little bit more of my surroundings. But it was beautiful. It was really nice to be there at sunset. It was pretty warm. Like, I don't know what it got down to, but it was about 27 or 26 when we started, temperature wise. But really cool, and came away with fifth place, which I'm quite happy with that. I don't really know. Didn't really know what to expect. There was a few really fast girls in there, but yeah, came fifth, which was cool. I've no idea what the caliber of athlete will be at Stromlo. I imagine there's some tough competition and I'm not going to be going out to win it, but I think I will try and push a bit harder than I did at Narrow Neck. I sort of took Narrow Neck relatively conservatively, knowing that I would have Stromlo coming up, and I wanted to be a little bit more prepared for Stromlo. It's a little bit more of a priority for me, just because I think the conditions might suit me a little bit better with it being slightly less elevation. So yeah, I'm super, super keen to run this weekend with the Capital Brewing team, and yeah, I'm gonna let you all know how it goes next week. We also recorded an episode this week that will come out next week, with Andy Dubois, who was just so great to listen to. Like, the first question I asked him, he spent maybe 5 or 6 minutes answering, and I was just like in awe. I was like, wow, this is all super interesting. We all talked about power training and foot pods, and I always just thought they were a gimmick, but wow, it makes so much sense and it's so logical. And I'm not going to go into detail today because you'll hear about it next week, but just get excited for that one because that was super interesting. Cool. I think I'm going to wrap this up. This has been nearly an hour. This is probably my longest solo episode for a very long time. So if you've stuck with me, thank you so much. Appreciate your patience and time and listening skills. And yeah, I'm going to leave you there. Thank you so much again. And let us know what you think. And I will chat to you soon. Lydia will chat to you soon. She was in our episode with Andy in the background. She's just still resting her vocal cords at the moment, but she is in and about all over the Instagram. And we've got some potential merch coming out, some potential new content options coming out. So lots of things happening in the background that you will find out about in good time. All right. Thank you so much, team. I will chat to you soon.